Twisted Roots by A.G. Parker. Read by A.G. Parker. Chapter 23. For the earth is filled with violence, and every living thing has lost its way. Naomi Alderman, The Power. At last, as the summer evening drew to a close, they were ready. They stood in the sealed chamber of the cavern, now a warren of containment charms and restraining spells. Large pewter jars of the cure waited for their moment on trembling shelves. Lorna made a doorway. She looked exhausted. Thick swirls of mist obscured the village and streamed in smoky spirals through the gateway. Elliot clambered through first, his pockets and hands and bulging bags laden with the labours of his misspent youth. He headed out onto the road behind the woods, now black as the night descended, lit beams of grey occasionally flashing white before him. They watched as his torch went swinging off through the trees and disappeared into the impenetrable clouds. Lorna checked her pocket watch and handed Layla the draft. "You've got 40 minutes until your mother appears. That gives you a long time to evade Jacob. Make sure you get this in his face. He has to breathe it in. Once you're in the village, make something, anything, to attract her attention and draw her to you. Then cloak yourself and get as far away as you can toward the ruins without her suspecting what you're doing. I'll have released Jacob by then and hopefully gathered the possessed villagers into the cavern and cured them. Good luck." Layla hugged her aunt and climbed through to the village. She acted quickly, not knowing how many villagers to expect or from what direction, and so she summoned fire, cast a containment around it, opened a doorway, everything she could think of to make an energy signal the witch could pick up on, and then extinguished, flattened, closed. She picked the threads loose and wrapped them around herself, creating a cloak, and got herself as far as she could toward the ruins, travelling cautiously to avoid detection, and then in the dim of the tree line, she waited. Lorna wove deflection after deflection into the fabric of the cavern. She'd have to time it just right so that each villager was trapped at the same time, or risk rousing the witch's suspicion. The walls shuddered as a storm raged above her, and brute waves shook the depths of the rock. Lorna shivered in the half-light and blamed the damp of the air for the chill in her bones. When they came, she would be glad of the distraction. Jacob flinched and pushed himself along the table until he was scrunched against the wall. He eyed Lorna and the vial of the glittering, noxious mist. She'd done her hard part. Now it was his turn. "How will it feel?" he asked. "Will it be the same as last time?" He watched her as her lips gathered around a lie, and then the lines on her face softened. "I don't know, Jacob. I..." He heard her searching for a kindness. "You may not feel anything or be aware of what's happening. The next time you wake up, it could all be over." "Or I could be awake for the whole thing." "Yes." Her eyebrows knitted. "I'm so sorry. I wish there were another way." Jacob set his shoulders back and jutted out his jaw. "It's fine," he said. But he licked around his lips, noticing how dry his mouth felt, and how his tongue stuck to the roof of his mouth as he tried to speak. "Just promise me we'll win." Lorna smiled and ploughed through the doubt. "We'll get it. It'll be thanks to you, and we'll get it." Jacob closed his eyes and nodded. He heard the containment close around him and the gentle pop as Lorna removed the cork from the lid of the vial. He squeezed his lids shut in case any of his fear came out, took a deep breath, and waited. It trickled in through his nose. He felt it scratch, sharp as before. He opened his eyes and saw Lorna, pale and concerned, and then the world went black. Jacob awoke as the mist took hold. It was a violent awakening. Lorna watched from behind the safety of the containment charm as his body trembled and jerked, convulsing as though something was shrugging itself into his shape. She cast the containment charm aside and watched as he tasted the air. Searching, hunting. He found the trace of Layla on the air and pushed his way out into the night, following his prey. Layla pushed her back into the rough bark of a tree. Her breath steamed clouds into the night. She checked her watch. Not long. Jacob would soon be near. She looked up to the stars for comfort or blessing. The refracted light twinkled back blankly. The world over which they glinted was absorbed in silence, so still, so quiet. And then the night cracked open. The explosion broke the air in two, splitting across the woods and fields in deafening fury. Shadows ignited, light hung in suspended, shattered brilliance. Under the yellowed grey of the fading flare, Jacob's face flickered, ghoulish and terrible. Layla's stomach pitched as the scream rose. She staunched its ascent, flattened it, turned it into something she could use. She slugged off the threads wrapped around her, left the refuge of the tree and sprang out into the night, away from the noise, away from the doorway and toward the lonely field in which death lay waiting. The explosion had injured Elliot badly. He'd crouched behind the remnants of a decapitated trunk, well outside the expected blast radius. Perhaps the witch had known. Perhaps the potion had added an extra potency to Elliot's arsenal. Perhaps the tree was implementing its death throes. Whatever, it hurt like hell. Elliot had cringed as his creations had detonated, but he had not considered their quarry, nor the violence of the reaction between them that might ensue, and did. The force penetrated the flimsy protection of the tree trunk. Tinnitus rang. The skin of his right side had peeled back. Charring and bleeding discoloured his face, and his right ear was no more than a shredded stub, thick with blood and hair. Fabric and flesh melded along his arm. He reached out to touch it with the fingertips of the other hand, but instead felt the wood of a tree trunk. Suddenly, it wasn't night time, and he wasn't by the dead tree. He was in the field behind the carnival, and in his hand was a rope. "Please," a plea rasped from the ground by his feet. "Please, I have children, I..." The rope tightened around her neck. She brought her hands up and tried to find a gap, but there was none. Elliot watched in horror as he looped the coiled end of the rope over a branch. "No," he was saying, "no, no." But nevertheless, he continued, feeling the weight of her lighten and wrench at his hands as she kicked and jerked. He pulled her higher. She ceased to beg. Something in him grinned. "It was you. No, you did this." He watched her clawing fingers still fighting at the ligature around her neck. She stared down at him, her eyes beginning to bulge as she tore at the skin under the rope. He wanted to save her. He fumbled with the rope, trying to ease her down, to fight whatever had control of him. But instead, his arms heaved on the line, drawing her up, up toward the limb of the tree over which the rope had been slung until her feet thrashed meters above the ground and her tongue protruded from her gaping mouth. "You did this. You're a killer." And then she was gone, and three different bodies hung from a swing set. His hand toyed with one of the children's shoes as he danced past. "All of this." He was on a bridge, standing behind a man. And then he was back. He was in amongst the aftermath of the explosion, his face burning and his arm throbbing where his jacket had melted into his skin. He retched. As he wiped the spittle from his mouth, he looked down. He saw his reflection in the stream. No charring, not even a smudge of dirt. And then he noticed his hand wasn't at his mouth anymore. He turned and saw the terrified face of Sam Matthews. "All of this is your doing." Elliot felt the thing in his head writhe with glee. It had already been decided. It was already done. But the pale boy was crying. "Please, I'd like to go home now." And Elliot's own voice was choking through tears, begging the thing in his head to stop, but it wouldn't. He felt his hand propel the boy toward the water, felt it push him down and force his face into the stream. He turned his own head away as the boy's thin little arms flailed and scratched at what he could, trying to save himself. It could have been over in moments, but the witch wrenched Elliot's head back to the boy and he watched helplessly as his own arm drew the boy out from the water and allowed him the smallest of breaths before plunging him back into the icy depths. Watch my game. Watch how the life slips away. The boy's struggles grew weaker. Elliot felt the warm glow of the boy's life join his own, her own, and the thing inside him beamed. He dropped to the ground. Back in semi-darkness, he painstakingly groped in the last bag for the remaining bottles Lorna had given him. He stumbled to his feet. His left eye scanned the ground for what he needed. With the last of his strength, Elliot scattered the draft over the roots and tatters of tree. There were no impressive flashes or flames, just a quiet, hissing sound, and the work was done. The tree that had held the witch its captor for centuries was gone. It lay now in the midst of a crater, greedy flames licking odd bits of branches and debris. There was nothing left here. Not really. Elliot sank down into the steaming mud and allowed his eyes to close. He wondered idly if he'd see home again, and fell into the deepest of sleeps, haunted by the things he'd done and the things he hadn't. The long hand of the church clock raced to meet its shorter counterpart at the zenith of their journey. Layla glanced at their progress across the gilded face as she ran, panting along the graveyard path. Time continued its steady arc. Layla felt the breath of seconds on her neck and the jaws of minutes snapping at her legs as she ran. She thought of her father's face as he changed into something less than nothing, and of the people she had known in the village who were now dead by their own hand, or the witch's hand, and of her mother who had died for this and would, if all went well, die again. She stumbled. How could this be her hope? Her legs felt her doubt and slowed. They seemed to lose their coordination and running became a task she needed her mind to process muscle by muscle. But if not this way, then how? She heard a stone skip, flint on tombstone, and threw a glance over her shoulder. Graveyards are silvery places, all grey stone and shadows and shifting phantasms of chrome, and yet the place of the dead seemed to throb with life in contrast to the hollowed puppet of Jacob's body. He was a void in the world, threatening to suck everything around him into that same blank place. Run, Layla told her legs. Run. Layla was already over the wall at its farthest end when Jacob came stumbling past the spire. He watched her swing her leg over and disappear into the blackness beyond, then followed. Inside, he was screaming. Part of him shouted for Layla to run whilst he struggled to prevent his own legs from running after her. But he was caught. The witch had staggered in his body as the tree had fallen. He had felt her anger surge into terrible gusts of violence. They had felt, together, every person under her spell as they were cleansed and the particles of her destroyed. But then he felt every atom as it returned to her and strengthened her. And now he felt how much she wanted to obliterate Layla's bloodline, how that rage and loathing seethed and seared inside and consumed them both. They were close now. Layla stood, facing them, defiant and serene on the edge of the rock. The wind blew her hair and scattered her words to the earth. He felt the witch's heart beat faster in his chest. He ran at Layla, headlong and mad, wanting to stop, but driven by a part of something that wouldn't let him go. The vacant tower's bells rang out their cry, and then, suddenly, he wasn't hurtling towards Layla anymore, but away. He stopped, turned around. She was standing there, perfect and lunatic and pale under the moon's caress. Her mother stood by her, staring into her face and smiling in blissful peace. And Layla's left hand shone an empty vial. He looked down and saw, as though through the bottom of a glass, that he was wet with its contents. He walked toward her, tried to reach out to her, to say he was sorry, but his hand made contact with an unseen shield, a containment. As he watched, it glimmered under the moon's soft light, and he noticed that within his body, he was alone. He looked at the mother and daughter trapped in the transparent dome. Then the third entity began to emerge. Layla's mother began to turn. Her face twisted in rigid contortion and her mouth became a grim gape. She lunged forward and dug her nails into Layla's arms. With that sick mouth, she bit at Layla's cheeks and forehead and chin. Blood spurted and trickled and ran, cascading black down Layla's exposed flesh. Jacob hammered at the protective surface of the bubble, scraping and scratching and begging to be let in. The witch turned to him and grinned. In her arms, Layla flopped like a rag doll. But when the bells began to chime, panic set in. The witch could feel her form slipping away. She clawed at the inner sides of the bubble. She mirrored Jacob's terror and desperation. Yet neither gained passage. Both entry and escape were denied. When midnight's final note reverberated in the night air, all went quiet, and the field was left with a bloodied rock, a mangled girl, and a quietly sobbing boy. End of chapter 23. Twisted Roots was published by Wild Wolf Publishing and is available on Kindle via Amazon or as a downloadable PDF via my website. The links for both of these are in the description of this podcast. You can follow me on social media at twisted_roots_agparker or a_g_parker on Instagram. Please head to my website for other details and to keep updated with my poetry, performances, fiction, articles, and more. I hope you enjoyed listening to this latest chapter of Twisted Roots and that you tune in next time.